Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Robert Jordan is working on the final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 23, Asmodian, part 1. I say part 1 because, obviously, Asmodian is too complex a character to talk about in one episode. We decided Asmo as a character deserves a week just for himself, other than his death, of course. He really is an interesting character, and I think that gets lost in the fact that he died and no one knows who did it. Joining myself this week, we have Carrie.
Hi, everybody. This week, my fan feedback is going to have a little bit to do with something that Robert Jordan has said. And we also have Andrew with us this week, and he has some very enlightening news.
Hello, everyone. This week in Wheel of Time news, we have an urgent update on Asmodian's condition. He's still dead. More on this story later. In other news, on Tuesday, November 28th, the 11th book of the series, Knife of Dreams, was made available in paperback form in the United States. Also, the Dragonmount community recently completed a Get Well project for Robert Jordan. The online project is a collection of art, poetry, short stories, and personal wishes for Mr. Jordan's continued recovery. If you'd like to see the Get Well project, you can find it at www.dragonmount.com/getwellrj/index.php. Get well, and the letters R and J are capitalized.
Welcome to Jason's Wheel of Time Journal. Welcome to Jason's Wheel of Time Journal. This week we're going to be going over chapters 5 through 8 of The Great Hunt. Last time we left off with Moiraine talking with Leanne and Suan. Moiraine and Suan continue to talk. They pretty much talk about things that we already know, such as things like Mazrim Tain and the Dragon Reborn. They discuss politics and how strong Rand really is in the power. After Moiraine leaves, she still feels that she held back from not telling her just everything. Skipping to, in the same chapter, Robert Jordan skips to Geofram Bornhold and the White Cloaks. They have an army near Almuth Plain. They talk about a lot of different politic things like that. After reading the chapter, I really don't even remember what they said, but I do remember that they said there was some whispers of Arthur Hawkwing's army returning. Some questioners show up and mention that there's an army on Toman Head that have, quote, monsters. This is referring to the Shanshan and them landing on Toman Head. Next, in the same chapter, we move to Leandrin's point of view. Leandrin goes to the quarters of Amalisa, who is Lord Angmar's sister. She threatens her with talk of dark friends, then uses compulsion on her and tells her that she has to find Rand, Matt, and Perrin, saying that they must be taken to Tar Valon because of the Black Aja. Now, I don't think at this point in either of the books that we've been really introduced to compulsion as being a sign of the Black Aja, so it kind of just seems like she's doing things that are a little out of the ordinary. I didn't really feel the first time that I read it that there was anything out of the ordinary, that she was really stepping outside of her bounds was really it. Now looking back and after reading it a few more times, I really understand that this is the chapter where we really understand that she is one of the Black Aja. I mean, that's exactly what she is. Moving on, we go to Padden Fane's point of view. He's sitting in the dark, and this is really quick. Someone comes in, and he says, quote, "You, not who I expected, dot, dot, dot," and then he says a couple other things, but this is the point where we learn later on in the books who it is that actually freed Padden Fane, and Robert Jordan does confirm it. We're not going to talk about it yet, because I like to keep the Wheel of Time Journal as spoiler-free as we can. And don't worry, in a few weeks we'll get there. The next chapter, Rand wakes up. Lon tells him that the Amarillan Seat is there looking for him and wants to meet with him. Perrin mentions that there are places in the hills where no one can find you, because Rand is still thinking about leaving. And then at that point, an alarm sounds in the keep. It's under attack. Rand learns that Egwene, Matt, and Perrin went to the dungeon with Pat and Fain. When he gets there, Fain wrote on the wall in blood, he wrote, "We will meet in Tilmont Head. It's never over, Althor." Rand scribbles it away. Obviously, he doesn't want himself implicated in any way with Pod and Fain. Leandrin comes in. She tries to compel Rand to answer her questions, but it's pretty interesting that he actually resists her compulsion. Ingtar comes in and tells him that they were let in from the inside. Meaning the Trollocs and all the raiding party. Lon tells Rand that he can now leave whenever he wants to, because if you do remember, he was blocked, and the order came from someone that no one really knows for sure, that no one was allowed to leave. The next morning, some of the Aes Sedai heal Matt. Even healed, Matt's life depends on finding the dagger to fully heal him from it. Angmar, he's going to send men to find the horn, and of course Matt must go since he's the only one that can safely carry the dagger. Baron talks of the Dark Prophecy written on the wall. We did cover prophecies and the Dark Prophecy specifically in a previous podcast, so I won't go over that too much. Basically, it talks about Lanfear coming back. Baron figures out that one of the boys must be the one that can channel and be the Dragon Reborn. Perrin then goes to visit Matt. Matt's sick. He doesn't remember anything after going to the dungeon. Leanne comes in and interrupts, and Perrin promptly picks her up and puts her aside and walks right out anyway. He then goes to see Rand. They talk about the old days a little bit. I think Rand is trying to fix the mean things that he said to Perrin earlier, but Perrin obviously still is mad at Rand for what he said. Perrin leaves. Lon comes in and tells Rand that he's summoned by the Emerald Seat. Lon tries to prepare him in a way that's very much like how a warder would act as far as his motions and what he says and whatnot. What do you guys think? Anything that you specifically remember from these chapters?
I remember mostly that I really liked the way that Lon took Rand under his wing and kind of was grooming him. That was like the beginning kind of a little bit where we see it go a little bit in the books. But I really miss it in the later books, the last few. But it goes a long way. Like, just that, what am I trying to say? His attitude, his bearing, the way he carries himself. That is what started a little bit of, like, the Dragon Reborn. Should I say that? Sorry.
No, that's okay. I don't think anyone's going to be spoiled knowing that he's the Dragon Reborn.
Anyway, sorry about that.
But yeah, spoiler. I agree. It seems like this is the seed that was planted that brought him into the honor and not doing the right thing, but the honor and the way to act around nobles and kings and queens and seats and whatnot. Yeah.
And the fact that he impressed the Amyrlin herself was just so impressive, just beyond that, because they're just waiting for this, like, country bumpkin to come along, and, you know, here he is showing everyone.
And and up till this point, that's exactly
great. I love that.
That's exactly what he acted like.
A country
bumpkin. Good way to put it.
Yeah, I, when I was thinking about, specifically in these particular chapters, one of the things that really sticks with me is when the keep is attacked, because number one, it's not supposed to be that possible, and immediately you kind of think, well, someone on the inside had to have helped the Trollocs and that to get in. And I remember Rand just kind of dashing through the women's quarters and out to try to find Egwene, trying to get down to the dungeon, and getting stopped by the Fade, and there's a Murdrel there. And Rand's kind of frozen, and he's still that, you know, really unsure of himself. And he's standing there like, okay, I can fight this thing. And then before he has a chance to even take one swipe at it, like, I think it's Ingtar and at least two or three other Shinarans, like, pile around him and start stabbing it to death. And they're just like, go, get out of here, you know. And Rand goes running off.
I think actually...
It might just be Ingtar.
I think it's Ingtar... Yeah, I think it's just him by himself, and it's interesting in that part too, because Rand leaves and Ingtar's there, with the Mydral, and Robert Jordan never specifically says that they actually fight, so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I didn't think that. Very interesting. I also remember thinking the first time I read it, when you were saying that, you know, we pretty much get our, that's where we know that who Leandrin is and that she's Black Aja. Well, I didn't specifically remember thinking, yeah, she's Black Aja, but I remember thinking, yeah, she's wicked. You know, there's something up with her, and she's definitely, I don't think the name Black Aja, like, it didn't pop into my head, but I completely didn't trust her. So later on, when certain things happen, I was just like, what are you doing? You know, where you're yelling at the characters in your head, and at least that's what I do. I'm thinking, oh, you're so stupid. But yeah, it's very well set up for what we find out.
Yeah, we're still being you know, introduced into the world, when, and no one really knows at that time exactly what compulsion is and how bad it really is. Like, now looking back in the books, we know whoever, you know, uses compulsion, they have to be evil. But at this point in the books, we don't know that yet. You know, so it's a situational irony that the characters and everybody else in the books know that that's so evil, but the reader at this point doesn't.
Spoiler warning.
This is the point in our podcast where we're going to say, well, we hope we didn't spoil you so far and what we've talked about. But going forward from right here, there's going to be some major spoilers, starting with the crazy theory of the week. So turn off now if you haven't read past book about 2.5.
Welcome to Ben's Crazy Theory of the Week.
Hello, everyone. Since Ben's not here this week, I'll be taking over the crazy theory for this week. It is taken from our forums at some point, I believe earlier in this month. Makan Shin posts, wouldn't it be utter genius if Loyal turned out to be a dark friend? He could end up killing someone really close to Rand, an example, Min, Elaine, or Avienda, or pretty much anyone of his choosing, considering that no one would ever suspect him. Imagine if he had been biding his time, just waiting for the most devastating moment to pounce. I don't know. Ouch. I honestly really have to disagree, I think. I think there's something about the Ogier that protects them from it, or from influence of the Dark One. I'm kind of taken back to the idea that the Steading is where they thrive. And if I remember correctly, really early in the series, they mentioned that creatures of the Dark One, even some like really devastating dark friends, just are loathed or even unable to enter Ogier Steading unless they're really, really forced into it. So I kind of think probably not, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
No, in more ways than one, but wouldn't it be interesting? But anyway, I don't think it's possible. A lot of people think that Robert Jordan inserts himself into the stories as Matt, but I kind of think that Loyal really is the personification of Robert Jordan with his books and his, his larger-than-life presence, really. I definitely don't think so. I think Loyal is one of the most pure characters in the books, and I think he serves that purpose quite well. There's so many pure evil characters. I think Loyal, and even as even the name itself, Loyal is
there's
so close
a reason
to Loyal,
why he,
so,
I know, think that he chose that name and why he created it the way he did. I mean, there's no way that he's going to turn out to be a dark friend, and I don't think it could be possible. Like Andrew said, how could a dark friend live in the Steading? You know, I could see them saying something like, well, he's been out of the Steading, whatever, but no, I can't see it. We'll all be in unison with this one.
Ben would agree. It's a crazy theory, one that Ben would be proud of, I think.
Yep, thanks again.
But that was a quick one anyway.
Yeah, thanks again to Manchin Sheen for giving us that one. But I think we definitely all have to disagree with that particular theory.
Welcome to Carrie's Fan Feedback of the Week. Okay, I have an email. And thanks to Colin for sending this in. This is what Colin writes. I just listened to your podcast, and you guys said you were going to have a podcast with theories as to who killed Asmodian. On this website is a chat that Robert Jordan held with fans, and it's a CNN.com website. It's CNN.com/chat/transcripts/2000/12/12/Jordan, if you got all that. And the best thing I can do is quote straight from the interview. Question from, I'm not even going to try and pronounce that. Why do you think everyone has a hard time figuring out who killed Asmodian? Grendel killed him. Robert Jordan. I don't know why people have a hard time figuring that out. To me, it seems intuitively obvious that even to the most casual observer. The reason I won't tell people, though, is that I'm enjoying watching them squirm entirely too much. It's probably bad for me. So there you have it. I haven't reread the book since I found this out, so I still don't quite know how it came about, but there's your answer. Colin Farstad, Portland, Oregon. So, the reason why I picked this one, even though we're not going into Asmodian's death himself in that, but is that we have a lot of people who have brought this up to us. Why do a show on his death when it's so black and white? It's right here. And basically, we've all discussed this, and one of the reasons that we think is that it's tricky wording on behalf of Robert Jordan. That maybe he's actually answering the first part of the question. Why do you think everyone has a hard time figuring out who killed Asmodian? They're two separate statements. One's a question, the next one is a statement. So he could very well be saying, you know, just answering the first one and not even touching on the second one. So we're going to kind of go on that so we can do a show next week. But I think that Robert Jordan in himself is very much like Aes Sedai, how they say you have to watch everything they say. The truth they say is not always what it is. Like, they cannot tell a lie, but at the same time, what they say is not usually what you're thinking that they're saying. So I think that he's very tricky that way, and that's what he's doing here. What do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I think you hit on a good point there. They asked him a direct question. He didn't directly answer the second part of the question. He answered the first part, but then he just left the second part alone. So I don't think specifically he was saying that she did, although next week we'll get into my theories as to exactly who she did. So there's a little hint as to who I think actually did it. But anyway, I think for that part, very much he was just answering the first part of the question. I don't think it's confirmation one way or the other that it was Grendel who did kill Asmo.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that concept. The exact words, the reason I don't tell people, though, is that I'm enjoying watching them squirm entirely too much. And, you know, it doesn't seem... It seems to me more like it's being said, yeah, the reason I don't tell them straight out who did it is because, I like watching people, you know, try to figure it out. And, you know, for me, it's really obvious. Of course, obviously, you know, because Robert Jordan, it would be really obvious.
He wrote it,
He wrote it. but yeah, it really does seem to me that he's kind of doing that Aes Sedai double talk and saying, you know, well, I don't know why everyone has a hard time figuring out who killed him. I'm not saying Grendel. As a matter of fact, he doesn't.
No, he never mentions her name at all. Yeah. He never even touches on that second statement. You know, he just... And...
Mm-hmm. Well, and if I remember correctly, at some point, they were talking again on the subject of who killed him, and Jordan said, you know, only a few people have ever actually, you know, said who it is. And I would think by this point in time, you know, everyone in the world has been tried as who's the killer, and, you know. But that will be talk for next show.
Definitely.
Yes, and if you haven't guessed already, we're not going to be talking about Asmodean's death this week. The reason why is because I think a lot of Asmodean is one of those characters. He gets lost in what actually happened to him in the end. His character isn't defined by his death. He's one of my favorite Forsaken. He's not, to me, he's not inherently evil. He wasn't born evil. It was a choice that he made. He really made the choice to be that way. He wants more power. I mean, that much is obvious. He wanted recognition for, for being exactly what he is. I don't think that he's necessarily the most vile, evil being that the rest of the Forsaken are. I mean, he's not evil to the core. He does cause some trouble for Rand right at the beginning when we're introduced to him. When Rand is with the IL, him and Rand have a pretty big battle. Asmodean, he ends up being cut off from the Dark One, and he's also partially shielded from the power. He's not completely shielded. Asmodean is the key in Rand's learning of a lot of the things in the power, and moving from a beginner level to being a beginner person that used the power to actually getting a little bit more advanced, kind of pushes him along the way for him to eventually teach himself. Asmodean is at Camelin when Ravine attacks Rand. Rand, of course, balefires Ravine. I mean, we all know the story. After Matt and Avienda are talking, this part actually maybe not a lot of people remember. Matt and Avienda, they're talking in the court after Matt and Avienda actually die, and then they're brought back to life by the balefire. But anyway, Asmodean, he's playing the harp. He seems really peaceful. Then he leaves. He goes in search of some wine. He opens the door, and bam. You can guess what happens. And then, like I said, we'll discuss that next week. What are your thoughts on Asmodean as a character? Not specifically his death, but Asmodean as a character in the Wheel of Time.
Well, Asmodean, is really just... Yeah, I think you're right. He is one of those interesting characters because he does get lost in the fact that they kill him and there's a big mystery around him. But I think like the bigger thing that really is just significant for him is Asmodean flips to the shadow in the first place because he's a composer. He's a noted composer. He was like a child prodigy in the Age of Legends, and he's a genius in music, and he's well known. He has enough recognition that he earned himself a third name, which is something unusual in the Age of Legends, kind of, which is why you get like Luster and Telamon and everything. But he still felt that he wasn't recognized enough, that people didn't appreciate him enough. So he turned over to the shadow so that when the shadow won, he'd live forever and he'd be one of the most famous people ever. And it just seems kind of really twisted, and how his mind had to have been warped enough to be able to go, oh, well, when the Dark Lord reigns supreme and everybody's living in a hell, then I'll be famous and everything will be cool. So it's just, it's really just kind of creepy. And then, of course, he plays, like, everything that he plays when we see him playing the harp is obviously all stuff that he wrote, because why would he condone to play something that someone else wrote? I mean, it just doesn't seem like his nature. So he's kind of a fun character to think about, because he's really more mental than we take him for, I think.
Yeah, he is. It says, I'm not sure if they said this at all on or in any of the books, but I know in the Big White Book that, like, if he didn't like a fellow artist, he would blind them or maim them, just because he didn't like them. So he would, it didn't matter what type of artist they were, he just, if he didn't like it, then that was it. Mostly composers, I guess, or anybody that was his rival. But even if it was like a writer, somebody he didn't like it, he would just maim them or make them blind, do whatever. So obviously he has this sick characteristic of, which obviously all of the Forsaken do, but at the same time, he's so regular, like regular Joe. Just he wants power. He wants people to recognize his name, to know who he is. But at the same time, he's one of those people that will just go with where he thinks, okay, the Dark Lord, I'm going to go serve him and I will get power and glory and everybody will know my name and have the recognition that I deserve. But then, here comes the Dragon Reborn. Even though he didn't do it with choice, he obviously goes and follows Rand. I'm sure there's something he could have worked out to do to betray Rand, but I think he was just going along with the flow because he's one of those opportunistic people that just goes with where he thinks that the greater person at the time, not that he thinks Rand is greater, but that that's where his highest chance of survival is. So he's very, very sneaky and probably not looked upon as like scary as some of the other Forsaken, like Demondred and them, Ishmael, because he's just crazy. But he seems just a little bit more average, but at the same time, very twisted.
Yeah, I think you hit on a couple good points there. One of the things that very much intrigues me about Asmodean is if anyone, and even in our world right now, I mean, if you think of the power that someone can have, if they were blessed with such a gift as being so gifted with music as Asmodean was, if they were also blessed at the same time with the power to do to people the things that Asmodean can do, how many of those, blessed people do you think would not use the power for the wrong reasons? I think inherently he's a good person, but because of the power and his thirst for power, which pretty much is the thirst that anyone would have, I would think, he goes down the wrong path. I mean, he chooses the path to be a Forsaken, but I don't think deep down on the inside, and I think he started to realize it too shortly before his death, that he really isn't that. I mean, he made some mistakes, he used his power for the wrong reasons, but how many of us in his situation would do differently? And I think that's the thing that most intrigues me about Asmodean, not his death, but the fact that if I was in the same position, if any of our listeners in this world were in the same position with being blessed with such a gift, and then being blessed with such a gift and then being able to do whatever you want to other people that have the same gift, who would do differently?
I see him as... he's maybe not on the same level of evil as some of the others, but he's still, if for some reason you could strike a deal with the devil and become like an amazing dancer, or your dream would come true.
Exactly.
I honestly see doing it.
Yeah.
Myself. I can't see, no matter what it was. I mean, maybe if, it was something like a loved one dying or something, but if it was just power for myself or something that I loved and hungered for, I still don't think, I can't see doing any of those things. I mean, maybe some people, I know that all of us at some point have that in us, but it's our choices that make us who we are. And so he still chose to do those things. He still...
Yeah, you have three, to me, at least in the books, in real life, really. I mean, you have three different kind of people. You have people that are going to be bad no matter what, which in the books are represented by the Dark Friends and obviously by the Forsaken. You have the people that will do good no matter what. I mean, you have Matt, Perrin, Rand. You have the heroes of the books. And then you have those people in the gray area. I think 95% of everybody is in the gray area. Those people that, if I'm given the opportunity, would they really choose the right thing, or would they choose to do what's best for them? Maybe it's a dark look on the world, but I think Asmodean and his importance as a character, I think, is representing those people that, when given the opportunity, they're not going to choose the right way to go. They're going to choose the selfish way. They're going to choose the easy path. They're going to choose the way of power. I think that's what he represents as far as, wow, this is really deep, isn't it? Anyway, not where I intended to go, but anyway, I think he represents the conflict in everyone, myself or society.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
You can definitely see that.
So that's our thoughts on Asmodian. We're not going to keep this to rest. Please do send us some emails. We are going to talk about them a little bit more. So if we get any other interesting theories, as we always seem to do, please send an email to us. I also want to say thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Fourth Age. I do want to give a quick hello to Megan. I hope she's going to smile when she hears it. She's one of our... maybe the only person that listens to us in Australia, which, believe it or not, if I dug a hole for my house, I'd end up just off the coast of Australia, interestingly enough. I sent her an email. I wanted to extend it to all of our listeners, too. We really do love everyone. We wouldn't put so much work into the podcast that we do each and every week if we didn't have so many people that love the Wheel of Time and that like to listen to us talk about it. We appreciate your emails, forum posts, posts in our podcast section on Dragon Mount. Keep up the great work, and I hope that we're living up to your expectations.
Also, everybody, I just want to have a note here that Ben Tu, our editor, he's created an account for those who want to download different size versions of the Fourth Age podcast. There are some people who maybe would like a little shorter because they don't have high speed and they can't download the bigger files. And there are some people who would like... a really big file because they want to hear amazing quality show. So we're trying to do everything we can to make it so everybody's happy. So what Ben number two was, he opened up, what he did was he opened up a FileFront account. And that way people can go to his account and just download either the smaller or bigger version, whichever he has there that's available of the podcasts. So far, I think he has three different podcasts up. You can get there by going to www.hosted.filefront, that's FileFront.com, Benjamin Chase, BenjaminChase. So you just go there and get what you're looking for. Also, don't forget about our MySpace. It's www.myspace.com/fourthage. You can send us an audio there. So if you want to give us a voicemail, comment there, comment on the blog, on our page, anything you want. Also, our number. It's 1-888-333-7690. Send in your feedback. We love to hear from you.
Also, I do want to add a note to about MySpace.com. Thanks, everyone, to who added myself to MySpace.com. And just a reminder, if you send a friend request to myself or Carrie or the Fourth Age, send us also a comment along to let us know that you're a listener, you're a Wheel of Time fan. There's so much spam and whatnot that goes on in MySpace. If I don't get a message along with a friend request, Unfortunately, I'm probably going to deny it, only because You never know. You never know who's going to be sending you a friend request. Also, episode notes, and this is something that I'm going to throw on really quick. Through the podcast, we actually do episode notes, and we kind of write down what we're going to talk about. If anyone's interested in getting them, just send me an email. I know we do have a few people, I think, that might email us to want them. Just send me an email if you want the notes on each episode. It's a good companion to go along so you know what we're going to talk about. So just send me an email, jason@dragonmount.com.
And speaking of email, if you'd like to send us crazy theories, regular theories, any sort of fan feedback at all, You can email us at podcast@dragonmount.com. Or alternatively, if you're the forum kind of person, you can go to www.dragonmount.com/forums. And we are under the Fourth Age. And you can, again, give us fan feedback. You can... post a topic. I think, like I said, our crazy theory of this week came directly out of the forums, and we're always looking at that too.
Again, thanks everyone for listening. I'm going to say goodbye now. Have a great week until our next episode. Goodbye.
Take care, everybody.
Blessed be you all in the light, and for Ben for this week, walk in the light.
The Fourth Age podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@dragonmount.com. The Fourth Age music is brought to us by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.